Welcome to What Would Jane Do? A podcast exploring women's work in cities and urban design. We are back from a bit of a break with four more conversations that we are so excited to share with you.
Yeah, and we are starting out with a conversation from March of 2021 with Megan McCollum. She is a dear friend of mine and an incredible muralist and urbanist, and she is the brains behind Blank Space Beeham. Megan has a passion for public art and a commitment to the community that I just feel like has set Blank Space apart in Birmingham. And we're really excited to release this episode because Blank Space has just announced details about Magic City Mural Fest happening this October in Birmingham, Alabama. So make sure to check out blankspacebeeham.com as well as our blog for details about Magic City Mural Fest and to see all the images of Blank Space's work. Megan is an awesome photographer, so you can see images of her favorite spaces in Birmingham as well.
Yeah, and a quick note as well is that we enjoyed our conversation with Megan so much that we completely lost track of the time. So in order to keep this episode from being too long, we won't have our usual debrief conversation at the end of the episode. But we really think this conversation stands on its own, and we're so excited to share it with you here. So yeah, please enjoy.
Well, Megan, we are so excited to have you today on What Would Jane Do? Really excited to talk to you. So first, can you just introduce yourself? And I know you're a fellow Birmingham resident, but can you also introduce us to your city in your style?
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me. I have been looking forward to this conversation with my other urbanism lovers. So like Caitlin said, my name is Megan. I am originally from north of Atlanta, but I moved to Birmingham for my undergraduate degree, which is in geography. And then through that, I studied abroad actually at my university, Samford, and ended up going to London, England, and falling in love with living in a big city. I had been, you know, raised in a suburb, a very homogenous landscape, not really, you know, understanding the depths of what it could look like to live in a big city. I'd visited cities before, but never in my life had I had to navigate public transportation or, you know, get to utilize sidewalks. That was, you know, transformational for me. And in that first kind of experience really started opening my eyes to studying urbanism and urban studies as a career path. And really, that led me kind of back to Birmingham and having that critical lens of looking at the city through a more, layered perspective, and started appreciating Birmingham from a deeper background. So for me, just kind of, it's important to present a city and its highlights and its low points as well, as every city does. So Birmingham is one of those post-Civil War regeneration cities founded in, I think, what was it, 1871, I believe, really became about for industry. We're located in the Jones Valley, one of the only places in the world that has the three raw materials needed to make steel, all within close proximity for one another. So it's limestone, coal, and iron ore. And, you know, post-Civil War just capitalized on this. We don't have a natural river source that's close to us to move these raw materials. So naturally, they just started building blast furnaces and building up the railroad. And that growth was just so explosive that we got this kind of moniker of the Magic City, because out of nowhere, we just kind of grew and blossomed and got our name, Birmingham, from Birmingham, England. And I know all of my UK friends are just like cringing when I say Birmingham. but that's, you know, that was our kind of our hail to the great industrial city of the UK. And really that shaped the backbone and who we were and who we are as a city. And really from there, it kind of progressed in terms of our development of how the city naturally kind of took form. And then through that, of course, through that lens of just being a city in the South, large connections to racism and how that looks like even to this day. Through my background of thinking through things through art. I like to kind of go back and say, how are people dealing with this and how are they looking at like the city through this artistic lens? And one of my favorite exhibits that the Birmingham Museum of Art had recently put on, I guess pre-COVID, was a photo exhibit by Celestia Morgan. And she's kind of a conceptual photographer where she was focusing really on redlining and what that looked like. And redlining is something, you know, that's happened across the United States and in its similar forms across the world in cities. But specifically here in Birmingham, it really impacted our development and the look and feel of our city by physically putting barriers in place in red lines. You know, banks and lenders would take a map of the city and draw lines around neighborhoods where African Americans lived and would classify them on where was desirable to live, if they qualified for home insurance, if they qualified for a mortgage based on the concentration. And that was the words on the map, was high Negro concentration. And it's just baffling. And then still 2021, we see the repercussions of that.
Yeah.
And it's just left a lasting mark on the city. The community has always been one that is strong and is not going to be held down by that legacy of racism. And so then you look through the kind of lens of the civil rights movement and see Birmingham as just this pivotal place of really changing things for the rest of the nation. We have the Children's March, 16th Street Baptist Church bombing, which really, you know, highlighted the atrocities for the rest of the country of the racism and the segregation and the violence that was happening here, kind of drew that national attention that was needed to pass the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So really, you can see that reflected in the physical design of our city, right? I think that there's a lasting legacy of that. But then, you know, moving forward, we can kind of now capitalize on, I would say, maybe the property that's around and that's available because of this white flight that happened, because of the collapse of the steel industry. So, you know, post-World War II, even though there was a boom in steel, here come the 70s and the late 60s, like PVC pipe comes, no one's using steel as much. So industry crumbles here. And because of that, now the city's poor. We can't afford to blow up our buildings to make room for shiny new ones. But we're left now like with this beautiful historic district in the middle of our downtown.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the past 10 years, we went from being this donut hole city where nothing was in the center of downtown to this revitalization of the University of Alabama at Birmingham is downtown. That started in the 70s, really kicked off this regeneration. They were actually just last week named the number one best big employer in the United States.
Yeah.
So cool. Really making a comeback. And then, you know, I would say in the last 10 years, really just seeing this regeneration of investment in terms of tech and trying to capitalize on our past as a steel industry based city, something that has historical significance and importance. But now we're more so trying to say, we want all your entrepreneurs. We want all your techies. We want everyone to come in. And how can we offer these services to make it a good place to be, to invest in? So I'd say we're in the middle of that. And then all the different things that attract people. So not only just the industry, but how can we make them want to stay once they're here? So better restaurants, better public spaces, housing. I think there's a long way to go on that, but you know, we're trying. We're in the middle of trying very hard.
Yeah, it's so true. And there's so many, like, especially with the tech sector, there's a lot of projects right now that are really trying to work and make it an equitable space, which I think because of our history and because Birmingham as a city has not shied away from that history, that, like, you know, people are working hard to make the future better.
Absolutely.
So it's, yeah. It's definitely, that was a beautiful summary of.
Yeah, I was thinking, gosh, you know, how do you ever give a city justice? But then when you think relatively, like compared to some of your other guests, like Birmingham is such a young city.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to think that we have, you know, come from literally nothing in the middle of a valley to where we are now, I think is really exciting to look at it and kind of the scale and perspective of the greater American story, if you will, and the opportunities that we've had to really frame big conversations that have national and international implications. And it makes it exciting to be in Birmingham and to call it my adoptive home.
Yeah. Well, you touched on at the end some of the public spaces that have been developed in the last few years. But tell us a little bit about what is your favorite space in Birmingham?
Oh gosh, I love Birmingham. I'm going to be one of the biggest cheerleaders for Birmingham. So I'm just thinking, could the city be my favorite public space? No, but in reality, I would say probably my favorite space would be Railroad Park. And so I love that even still I'm drawn to this city energy. I think every good city needs that return to nature so you can recharge. And to me, Railroad Park is this perfect example of Birmingham trying their best to pull all these resources together to, you know, really create an opportunity for, I guess I would say inclusion. I would say even at the place in which it's located is so strategic. Railroad parks are originally, it's quite literally next to the railroad. It was where the original switch yards were. So it's very close to that historic perspective. But then nowadays, there's been so much development around that. We have our minor league baseball stadium and some breweries and the innovation district. But in the middle of that is just like this beautiful park that we've kind of lovingly deemed Birmingham's living room. And to me, what makes me enjoy it so much is with a history that has such a deep past in segregation, that now we can come to this space and see it being used by everyone. And it just makes me emotional. Like, you know, everyone's using the space and there is no separation. It's against this beautiful backdrop of seeing the skyline of Birmingham, and there's trees that are maturing, and, you know, there's pathways for walking and cycling, and, you know, you could take a yoga class there under the pavilion, or you could do a hip hop dance class, or in the summers, the Alabama Symphony Orchestra plays in the lawn and you can bring a picnic. And it's just kind of like, for me, I live in an apartment, so it's quite literally my backyard to get to use this green space. And yeah, I love that we have that resource in Birmingham.
Yeah. It's, I love Railroad Park too. It's such a good example of like a public-private partnership that was done really successfully. And part of that is because the management of it is so good that like it's constantly, like it's so beautiful.
Sorry, how did it come about then? Like, was it the city?
So yeah, the city owns it. And then the Railroad Park Foundation manages it. So it is one of those spaces where I think sometimes causes people to be like, wait, is this a private park? Because there's rules and it technically closes at 11 p.m., but the city owns it. I think that's a very foreign concept to Southerners, but like Southerners in Southern cities is this idea of public space. I'd say that that's not something that the South has traditionally, outside of like a town square in a smaller town, that's not something that is immediately, like consciously prominent in people's desire for what they would say in a city. Because I'd say living in cities is not a very Southern thing to do. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't emulate the values that a lot of Southerners have. And I think the really interesting thing about what we're seeing with this regeneration in Birmingham and lots of cities across the South is this broadening of the perspectives of what does it mean to look like, to have a family or to be a professional or where you live, what does home look like? And really kind of, it's not necessarily that 2.5 children with your own home and a white picket fence. You know, you could live downtown in an apartment and walk to the grocery store and cycle to work. And I think that's a very foreign concept for a lot of Southerners mm-hmm. specifically. So I think it's been interesting to watch people be like, oh, wait, we're catching on. Is this what everyone else was talking about? This is what everyone else really enjoys doing, being close to culture and access to resources and public transportation. So we're getting there.
Yeah. It's interesting with the park too, because thinking about it from like a UK perspective, the critique would probably be that it's like privatized public space.
But oh, absolutely.
In our context, like that, it doesn't, like that's a positive thing in a way. I mean, you know, there's positives and negatives to it, of course, but it is just interesting to think about. So tell us about Blank Space Birmingham and tell us a little bit about one, like how you started it, how it got started, but also just the heart and soul of Blank Space. Like what is the mission and how does it exist in Birmingham?
Sure. Yeah. So that's buckle in, kids. So I've been really fortunate to be doing this for the past five and a half years, which seems bizarre to say. And really, this kind of desire to see art intervene into spaces began when I was living in the UK. And so I actually went to graduate school in the UK. I went to Queen Mary University of London, where I studied cities and cultures, fortunately, as a Rotary Global Scholar. So I had extra opportunities to dive in with specific community members and do extra levels of research that I hadn't previously anticipated having access to in my graduate experience. And through that, had the chance to work with a lot of grassroots organizations, spent a lot of time living and working, obviously, in the East End of London, which is a very diverse, vibrant place to be. And street art is huge in the story of that place, but only recently, right? And so I became interested in this idea of memory building, how we can intervene into spaces. Are we confirming and using art to kind of affirm a place's authenticity? Are we reclaiming a narrative, or are we disputing it and writing our own? And so it became this very interesting adventure into like almost an existential crisis. What does it mean to be authentic? You know, and looking at a city's identity in that way. And when I came back to the U.S., realizing no one in Birmingham was having that conversation. At that time, we were experiencing this kind of boost, like I said, in reinvestment. And I just thought that it was going to be really important moving forward to have some sort of artistic intervention that humanized what was happening. And so Blank Space started around this very simple, you know, unplanned that became planned concept of doing a giant mural on the side of a building downtown that my friends Stephanie and Kyle Cruz owned the building. They said, we want to put this giant mural on it. How do we make this happen? We quickly realized that raising thousands and thousands of dollars was easier as a something instead of someone's. So we just kind of named ourselves, found some success through that project, through fundraising. And then afterwards, realizing that Birmingham was very receptive to this idea of murals, of art as an intervention into space, and really not even just an intervention, but a reclamation of the space, right? So for me, coming from this urban studies background of being very interested in saying, how are we reclaiming this urban like field of vision where we can humanize these spaces instead of just making, you know, getting rid of everything so it can be commercial. And that was super important to me. So really capitalizing on that idea, moving it forward. First, Blank Space operated as a nonprofit. That got super messy. you know, trying to find this space for how Blank Space could exist in a city that has no public policy around public art. We don't have any sort of official mural program. We don't have an official view or policy on public art programs, and really running into a lot of obstacles with how do you get permits? How do you get permissions and design review and all of those different elements to what it looks like to see a project realized in a downtown where everyone wants a say in what's going to happen, but no one's created a formal process around it. So through kind of the past 5 years, just trial and error, just figuring out what works most. But at the end of the day, I would say like the heart of Blank Space really is about community and injecting the human experience back into our cities. So if we can create an opportunity just for a moment where someone says, a person put this here and it required thoughts and collaboration, you know, to see this realized, then if it's just like a blink that someone says, okay, I belong to something. This is part of a greater story. Like as cliche as it is, you know, just those moments of aha, you know, or what it's all about for me.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I think really sets Blank Space apart in Birmingham is that like commitment to community involvement wherever you can. And really just and I think this comes from your background, is like the foresight into the future, like thinking about how people are going to interact with this art, how, like, you know, how it will affect the city, change the city's landscape. Whereas, yeah, you know, maybe some artists don't necessarily have that same sort of perspective that you do. What are some of your favorite projects that you've done through Blank Space?
Yeah, I mean, to that credit, and thank you, I think where I've seen the most success is when I have made this long-term commitment to working with the community. And I think a lot of times what is difficult about that is that it takes time and that people have lots of opinions, and it is difficult, you know, and I think sometimes that can be a very frustrating process for a lot of people, and especially considering where this funding is coming from, right? So if artists are approaching a client or a business saying, hey, can I use your wall to put this picture on it? Oh, also, can you pay for it? Then that business wants they have an interest in what's being put on that wall. And for me, I quickly started realizing I don't want this just to become some sort of guerrilla marketing. I want it to have a deeper meaning. I want it to reflect the people that are in those neighborhoods, their voice and their experience. And it is that vision towards sustainability. So for me, my favorite projects have always been the ones where I've just sat across from a table from, you know, a local business owner and the neighborhood association president, and they're just dreaming, right? And they don't know where it's going to go, and they don't know how they're going to do it, but they just believe that art can be the answer to bringing this kind of sense of place identity and civic pride, and they want to do it professionally. They want to do it to a high standard. I think that's also kind of that happy medium of murals of there is no barrier of entry to painting a mural. Literally go get paint and put it on the wall. Anyone can do it. But I think the difference then is having that level of professionalism that says this is an investment that not only reflects the city or the community or the neighborhood that this piece is in, but now this is something that's done to such a standard that it shows we're invested in how we're represented and we are worthy of quality. and of something that's beautiful to look at. And so recently I finished a project that was 2,200 square feet. I partnered with the University of Alabama at Birmingham and the Titusville community, which again was one of those communities that was most heavily impacted by redlining in the 30s and the 40s. And to see how they all as a community came together to design this piece, to work on rebranding their neighborhood. So coming up with a logo and a new design for their city map and banners that they can put up on their streets. And really the design process for that was meeting with different community leaders, having that input, what's important, and working with UAB. And they kind of, they just took the reins and they designed that whole mural themselves. And my team just came in to help install and to guide them in that process of, this is how much paint you'll need. This is the manpower that you're going to need. So really doing more of that project management consulting aspect of it. And I had no say in the design, but really to me was one of the most rewarding experiences because it was done with intention and in partnership. And so I'm not going to say that I don't love the other projects where it's just, you know, a straight paycheck, but because for me, like operating as a small business and kind of trying to view myself as a social entrepreneur, those other projects help me fund other smaller projects for organizations that can't afford a mural at a typical market value, right? And so I'm in a way allowing my bigger projects to kind of provide micro grants to these tiny organizations that have space but no resources to make an impact. And really seeing that from conception to completion sort of project is always my favorite. So I guess really, you know, to go back to that previous question, at the heart of Blank Space is really people, the art is secondary. You know, it's about that end point of that reaction of, you know, seeing yourself or seeing your community reflected on a wall, but then also the power of public art, or at least murals for myself, comes through the story of how it came to be. And I think sometimes that is more impactful when you know that a true effort was made to invest in the longevity of that than maybe just like a random beautiful piece, which I love murals. I'm not going to say that I've been to New York and I know no one's talked to the neighbors about that mural and it's still a beautiful piece, right? But I think for me, what works for Birmingham, just by the nature of how our city exists and the history of our city, it needs to be done successfully with a partnership of the community. And I think that's why Blank Space has seen the success that we've had, is because we prioritize that community voice.
Yeah.
I just love listening to you talk about this. And I actually love the fact that I was reading earlier about Blank Space, and I love that you use the word reclaim public space. Mm-hmm. It's like bringing public space to people. That is the heart of public space. And I love that your focus, and when you said your favorite projects are the one that you work with the community, it's like because you understand that that people are the heart of everything.
Absolutely.
So I think it's so valuable. I don't know if that's a word, that that you don't shy away from it. Because sometimes when, like urbanists, we do work with the community, we say, no, we are doing this participation process, but it becomes too expensive. Mm-hmm. It's too many people to talk to. It's so many buts. Mm-hmm. But I just love that.
I mean, it's also that kind of effort of recognizing what I've done. I have myself been this consistent presence in the story of Blank Space, but I would be remiss to ignore the fact that this Blank Space story could not exist without the dedication and investment of so many different people along the past 5.5 years, where, you know, it is hard, like you said, and it does take a long time, and there's the red tape and people that, you know, you want to go back and forth with. And so that's been some of the growing pains of Blank Space, right? Is being very true to the core of what I believe and knowing that the investment and working with people is the right thing to do. And it may not be the easy thing to do.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes we can't take a one-size-fits-all approach to mural art in cities. So it's very easy to look around at another city and say, they've got this thriving program and they're putting something up all the time, or, you know, just up the road in Huntsville, an hour and a half, 2 hours away, they're doing this and this. And I don't know what their mural programs look like, but just thinking through, we're not those places. We're Birmingham, and we have the opportunity to do things differently. And that's me not trying to like discredit what any other artist is doing in the city, because I do think there's value to the way that other people are approaching things. But for myself, I know how do I reconcile coming this back from this background of understanding the importance of design and public space. It's almost like a greater responsibility because I know better. But if you don't know better, then, well, ignorance is bliss, right? But for me, if I just started running around painting whatever I wanted, I couldn't sleep at night.
Well, and that's one of the other things too that I wanted to ask you about, with that is kind of unique with Blank Space, is that you know, you're the one running, you know, the program, but it's supported by a collective of artists in a way, right? Can you tell Absolutely. Us a little bit about how that actually works?
Sure. Yeah. So really Blank Space, I've worked very hard to make it a one-stop shop in terms of consulting, project management, design, and installation. And just because I have found quickly that I cannot do all of those things on my own, I work with a collective of artists. I am so depending on a project, will outsource the painting and design process, inviting people in. And really a large part of what I do or aim to do and hope to do better in the future is to include those voices in the design process as well. So not just about those neighborhood town hall meetings where everyone says, oh, I want a yellow school bus on the mural and I want purple like stars in the background. Like really working with people from those communities of, do they have art in their background? Are they interested in participating in the installation of the piece at where we can? And so I'm also very like aware of the fact that that is an area that I can do better, because it takes work. Right. You know, and it's difficult to make those connections. But yeah, working with a collective of artists. So from anywhere 10 to 20 or just two of us on a project, depending on what it looks like, where I can find volunteers. And sometimes it'll just be a scenario where I've got maybe three paid artists on a project, but we have different community volunteers so that we can have physical members of the community there painting alongside us, but offering, you know, kind of an apprenticeship program, in the sense that these artists that don't have mural experience but are incredible artists have this barrier of entry into getting paid to do work, because like most other careers and jobs, of you must have X amount of experience before you can do this, right? And so for me, I was really fortunate to create my experience. And then now if I can provide those entry points for other people to say, well, just come volunteer with me for a while, and I'm not going to take it personally if you move on, because I work with them as contractors. And my goal is, work with me, learn how to put up a mural, learn how to collaborate, learn how to do these meetings, and then please go out and do it better than me. Do it, you know, and other parts of the city that I've not worked in yet. Like, my goal is to see Birmingham, A, covered in art, but B, covered in art intentionally, you know? And so I feel often that if the more that we can have these conversations and tell people why what they're doing is important and not that it's just pretty to look at, that we can kind of steer the larger conversation of mural art in Birmingham, because there has really been this explosive response to using murals in Birmingham, I'd say in the past 5 years, really, honestly. So I'm definitely not the only one painting. We have incredible female artists, which excites me. And that's like one of my big things, is seeing more diversity and representation in the public art and street art scene. Just, you know, in general, it's a man's game. Or at least that's what it's been presented as. And you have to just take 2 seconds to get on Instagram to see these incredible women that are just competing right up there with the best of them, you know, in terms of what they're creating. And I think here in Birmingham, it's been about finding opportunities to amplify those female voices. And that's been really important to me. So not on purpose, but kind of naturally have found myself working with mostly female crews. And so I think that's a really important thing for young women to see, and not just young women, but for men to see that women are capable of doing this very physical manual labor, you know, constructing scaffolding and putting it up together yourself, and climbing up and operating heavy machinery, and lugging around 5 gallon buckets of paint and things. And that's also been a part of the story of our work, right? Is being a woman in this urban space where so often we're told to be intimidated by it, or that it's not a safe space for us. And so the physical act of us painting as women in an urban space is like a reclamation of that narrative of this is a space for us, and we belong here, and we can do it. And there's just been too many times in the past 5 years where people have, you know, said, oh, do you need help putting that up? And it's this weird balance of that Southern gentlemanly, like, oh, I just want to help you, young lady. And I'm like, I can put up my own scaffolding.
I love how you describe that. Again, like the idea of reclaiming space, especially as a woman in an urban space, because yeah, like so many times the spaces are not seen as safe for us. But again, like interacting with art, like you interacting with the urban space as a woman, but then also other people seeing you interact in that space as a woman. So like driving by the mural that you're painting, and it's an all-female team putting up the mural, like just seeing that as well is really cool. And I know that you had some big plans in 2020 that sadly you know, pandemic affected, but can you tell us a little bit about the mural festival that you planned? Because that was going to be another big space where, you know, women kind of reclaiming this urban space.
Well, happy to announce here first that it is coming back. So it has been rescheduled for this coming October. Kind of in a different format. It's obviously not going to have that same level of public interaction within the execution of the project, but still highly collaborative in the sense of engaging in the community over Zoom meetings and, you know, ultimately creating a space that people can feel safe in and enjoyable or enjoy that space. So Magic City Mural Festival is what we're going with since we're in the Magic City. And right now it's in Woodlawn, or we're planning it to be in Woodlawn, which is a neighborhood in East Birmingham. Beautiful history. It's filled with the most amazing entrepreneurs, creatives, people that really are committed to seeing the voice, the authentic voice of Woodlawn be preserved and magnified. And so I've really been grateful to have the opportunity to really just come alongside some community stakeholders that have seen the value of art in the city. Jason Avery in particular, he's been a godsend for me working on this project, of just kind of being someone that is committed in the same sense that I am to seeing this project through and really making things happen. So right now the plan is There's a back alleyway behind a day school and a kind of a main street strip of shops. And it was a very neglected space. It had lots of, you know, garbage and broken glass and the lights, you know, some of the street lights aren't working. A classic don't walk down that alley vibes. But in a lot of ways is a very main artery for getting from one block to the other, and that it opens up from a side street that has shops to opening right across the street. And I believe it's a Family Dollar, which is like a discounted kind of general store. And so lots of times you'll see people walking through that space to get to that store where they can find things that they need for their family, because that is another large element of Woodlawn is a neighborhood that's experienced, again, the effects of redlining and that economic kind of systemic in a lot of ways oppression. And so really Woodlawn has been working very hard to regenerate and reinvest and do that in community with an intentionality to see that place thrive. So background for that, working with Jason to identify where we could best do these murals, right? So originally we said, oh, let's put a mural, you know, all like we could put 7 different murals and do a giant walking trail and get people to walk around the neighborhood and have them move and interact with their space. And as we were going through the neighborhood, trying to identify what these best spaces would be, really, we were walking through that alleyway to get to another spot. And we almost both just had this kind of moment at the same time. We're like, wait, this alley could be something. And he's coming at it from a placemaking perspective of let's hang some lights and we can put some gravel down and get tables and chairs and we can do some landscaping and really just this placemaking element. And how can art be used, murals be used to engage that space even further? So right now we're looking at 6 murals in that alley. We had a open call for artists, which I thought, you know, maybe some of my artist friends from Birmingham were going to apply to. And the next thing I know, it's 55 people from across the country applied. And now, like through this process, someone from Boston and from Seattle, Los Angeles, and Richmond, Virginia. And then also making sure that we had this representation of local artists as well, right? And I'm just so excited it's happening. It's not always going to be just a purely female artist based festival, but I wanted to take the opportunity to really give women their moment to shine, you know, especially in this wonderful juxtaposition of everything that I've been talking about of women in this urban space, but also the need to put women at the forefront of a industry where often they are not as visible as our male kind of counterparts are. And in a way also that we're not, I guess in a way that we're writing that story, that someone isn't kind of doing it for us or saying, oh, isn't it great? Aren't they cute? Like girl power, like that we are doing it. And we just so happen to all be women, but that's not my angle here, is not to be like, we're only going to paint these beautifully feminine things. And, you know, these traditional ideas of what it means to be a woman or what it means to be a woman in this space. And so really, I just wanted to work with artists that had the same mindset for community. So part of that application process was, you know, questions about, do you think artists have a social responsibility for their work? And really seeing who was open to that engagement process of, we're going to be having community meetings. If you can't be here physically, like I expect you to be on a Zoom call linking into these meetings. And if you miss more than 2, then I'm going to have to replace you. Because for me, at the end of the day, that's the most important part. Like, they could be an incredible artist, but if there's not that connection, then I want someone from Woodlawn to be able to walk through this alleyway and feel like it represents their greater story. Mm-hmm. And so working with Jason and with other community members, with the neighborhood association, with local business owners, is really the Woodlawn Foundation, hopefully, is going to really empower us to be able to work with different businesses and groups within that community. Is really just about, like, at the end of the day, creating this space that people love to go to and love to spend time in and feel, again, is, yeah, a reflection of who they are and where they're from, even if it was painted by artists from Los Angeles or Boston, you know? So how can we do that with a commitment to intention? Yeah. So very excited about that.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited for that to be in Birmingham, and especially in Woodlawn. It'll be really cool to see.
Yeah, I want to be there.
Yeah.
October, right? Well, I think I can travel by then.
Thinking about what you've talked about, the community being the main involvement in the art, it's not to forget what the art is actually representing as well, that's coming up on these murals. So I was looking or thinking a bit about symbolism and your thoughts around that. How is it when you talk to the artists, when you talk to the community, what is it that they want when you do those projects? What are they seeking? Do they have an input, or are they just ready for something that's pretty? I mean, I've seen a lot of the work you've done and it's great. You can see there's something else behind it, but it would just be nice to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, well, that's a great question, because I do feel that a lot of times that it is this, like, very very fine line between the both, and a large part of my job often becomes making sure that all the interested parties have a kind of compromise, because it's never going to exactly reflect. I often refer to working with artists as herding cats. So, you know, it's like, yeah, like, great energy, everyone loves it, but they're also all over the place. So trying to bring those voices in. And then also, if you've, you know, ever been in a town hall meeting or a neighborhood association meeting, very quickly recognizing the people that make the time to show up for those meetings are the very vocal people in that neighborhood that have very strong opinions about what should be happening in their neighborhood. So how can we then, as myself, as an outsider, come into this scenario and say, okay, what is maybe Mrs. Johnson's quirk to her personality that I will never, ever make her happy? It could be a portrait of her face and I will never make her happy. But, you know, what is that? What is she really saying when she's raising her concerns? Is she concerned that we're painting this because she's intimidated by the prospect of putting something new there and new people coming into the neighborhood and seeing it? And what is this going to do about gentrification for the neighborhood? I tried to take those opportunities to address those concerns in those settings. But then also, that's why I like our murals to have a bit more of a deeper meaning instead of just being something pretty, because when it's tied to a greater story or when it's tied to a reflection of something that is place specific, neighborhood specific, then I think it, you know, has less of a chance of kicking off this gentrification, which to me is a very real concern, is a very real, a valid concern that lots of times artists do not intend for, but are the pioneer gentrifiers, where they're moving into these neighborhoods that are accessible to their income level as a freelancing artist, you know, drawn to the same things that, you know, artists have been drawn to for thousands of years, of this creative energy and resources, and is it affordable to live here, and all of these different things, you know, and the things that draw us to those areas and then they create their space and or their art in are the same things that people are like, well, we could market that. And then they want to follow that. So I think, you know, I've had some conviction lately of looking around projects and saying, oh gosh, no, it's just too pretty. Like there's like, or it's like too cute, or working with a business, you know, these murals can be thousands and thousands of dollars. And so they want to make sure that, well, I want it to look nice, or I want it to have my company's name, or this is my company's tagline or something. And how do you strike this balance of doing something that looks nice, but also has a greater purpose? And to be brutally honest and a critique on myself is I don't think I've always gotten that right. But I also know that I'm aware of it and that I want to do better. And that I'm having those conversations. And I think that's the most important part. It's a tough balance. And I would say it more times than not leans towards people wanting something that just looks nice. And I'm the person that's like, but let's make it mean something.
That's what I was going to say. I think you've done a good job of doing that, especially when you're working with commercial clients. It's a whole nother ball game when you're working in the community, I'm sure. But I know you've done a really good job with that because for our listeners' sake, you know, Birmingham has like iconic images that get used over and over. So there's like the Vulcan, who's this, you know, kind of statuesque man holding a spear to the sky. And, you know, there's Miss Fancies, who is this, you know, historic elephant that gets used in images a lot. So a lot of times I know businesses go to you and say, well, we want the Vulcan, mm-hmm. or we want Miss Fancy. And I know you kind of help guide them to like, okay, well, let's think about what's relevant to your business and create like a new image. So I think you've done a good job with that.
Thank you. I could look through my inbox right now and pull up at least 20 emails that are like, we're thinking something like the Birmingham skyline. And I'm like, my thing is, you know, and I hate to say it, it's just like, we're in the skyline. Like, we don't need a painting of the skyline when we're like in the city, right? And that's been done before. And so I think that's where a lot of my work has been coming through lately is, you know, the groundwork has been laid for people to be interested in using murals. Awesome. Now that next step is to help, and not just my responsibility. I think everyone that's painting murals in the city has a responsibility to guide clients, guide, you know, stakeholders towards something that's, you know, I guess better. You know, we'll have a lot of people come to us with the exact idea of what they want to paint already. And I think maybe that's kind of the gap between what I do as a business is they're like, just expecting me to install their design already. And, oh, I just want this, this, and this. And I just can't paint it myself. And then I just turn those projects down and it hurts because they're usually the ones that have the most money tied to them. But I think that's something that I've had to do for myself is to just kind of, stay true to what the core of Blank Space is, what that vision is.
Okay, well, before we sign off, tell us one thing that's giving you hope right now about your city.
I think that's the thing that's giving me the most hope is there is an energy and there is an excitement for people to be in Birmingham. And that is something that we've been missing for a very long time. I think downtown for the longest, maybe like 30 years, was a place that people did not want to be. And now we're in this state of becoming and people want to be a part of the becoming and they want to help carry that vision for a better Birmingham forward and really capitalizing on this idea of, you know, in the early days of we experienced this huge growth and being called the Magic City, but really, again, that buzzword of reclamation, of reclaiming magic, not just for how quickly we grew, but the magic of this energy of Birmingham. And so something that I always love to say in regards to being a interested, invested citizen of Birmingham is not to just live in the magic of our city, but to be the magic. And I think that's what gives me hope, is people really clinging to that, to being the magic they wish to see here.
Thank you so much, Megan, for chatting with us. This has been so, so good. Such a
feel
inspiring.
Like chatting at you.
Yeah, no. Oh my gosh. Your perspective is so interesting. You know, I think being in the mural space, but also just coming from an urban study space and really getting the layers to the city, I think is what, you know, makes you so interesting and so perfect for what you're doing. You know,
I love it. Thank you. Appreciate that, Keelan.
But Megan, thank you so much. It was really enlightening to hear you talk about the work you do.
Thank you. Thank you so much for allowing me the space. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to What Would Jane Do? Tune in next time as we continue to explore women in cities and urban design. What Would Jane Do? Is hosted by me, Caitlin Foote,
Kaisa Leon Lilja,
and Stephanie Alia Pastrana.
Together, we make up Collectivo Design Group. You can find us at collectivo.com, on Instagram at Collectivo Design, and on Twitter at Collectivo DG. And that's Collectivo with a K.